What's up, No Nation? It's Jesse from Plant the Spear back with you for another episode, and thank you all for joining me. Want to get some thoughts today about Florida State is getting better, but... So we're going to look back at some of the things that we saw versus Cal, some of the things going forward, a little bit of touch on SMU, and just some overall thoughts on where Florida State is at right now, coming off of their first win of the season. And really, I think the overarching point here is that, look, it wasn't necessarily pretty versus Cal, but a win is always better than a loss. So even an ugly win is better. I mean, there's no pretty loss, really. So at least we'll take it, right? I think the program needed this. The fan base needed this. So just nice to get in the win column and have something positive to talk about today. Now, unfortunately, it's not all positive, but we're going to have some positive things to touch on. So again, thank you guys for joining me. Not feeling too great today, so we're going to kind of keep this one a little bit short and straight to the point here. But, you know, we got to get something out for you guys to get some thoughts on this team. So let's jump in. First off, I do want to say, obviously, if you are watching in the Florida area, in the state of Florida, in the Big Bend, Tallahassee, you know, panhandle type region, southeast or southwest Georgia, you guys, if you're in the storm's path coming up, this hurricane, please, guys, we want to send you our well wishes that everybody stays safe. Be very smart about what you need to do. If you feel inclined to leave town, please do leave. And also look out for each other. You know, you may have an elderly neighbor or someone with children or something like that that doesn't have anyone else, doesn't have any family to lean on. So, you know, in times like these, it's best to look out for each other as much as it is to look out for yourself. Most of you guys know I'm a first responder full time, so. You know, a lot of times when I used to live on the coast, we used to deal with these things. You don't get to leave, you know, and so a lot of times it's about if you can leave, not putting strain on the first responder system and stuff like that. So, guys, just be smart. I know most of you guys are from Florida. You know, you'll probably just, you know, grab some extra beer and have a hurricane party. But whatever you do, guys, again, just be smart and check on your neighbors there. Also, I do want to touch on a couple of quick announcements. Now, Florida State got more than one win on Saturday night, which is nice. They also added four-star running back Byron Lewis to Tribe 25. So that is a big addition to this class because, again, you know, we had just seen where Florida State had two decommitments after that rough start to the season. So just to see them get some positive news on the recruiting trail also helps. You've also seen some guys that are kind of like, look, hey, you know, Peyton Joseph is one that's like, look, you can kind of stop asking me about this because I'm a Noel. I'm committed. Not everybody's here, you know, just for the good times. People are here for the good and the bad. And so it's good to see those types of things for Florida State to get that positive momentum there as well. Another quick announcement here. Florida State gets another night game. Clemson has been announced. Now, it is not concrete yet what time exactly it'll be. It will either be 7 o'clock or 7:30. On ABC or ESPN, which again, man, this is kind of funny because Florida State, even in their current state, as bad as they have been, continue to get these primetime games because again, people know that regardless, we've talked about this on past episodes, even in a down year, even in the down years before now, Florida State has been one of the biggest TV draws in the ACC. So you know that Florida State Clemson game, you know, you're going to have a lot of people watching, even if it is hate watchers. Hey, they still bring the numbers. So that is something to be on the lookout there as well. It's going to be a good, you know, an environment. I don't think people are going to maybe be as hopeful in that game as they were against Cal. Of course, it depends on how things look on Saturday. Like if they come out and they beat SMU, then you carry some momentum into another game there. Of course, Clemson looks pretty good right now, but you know, I feel like Clemson is a little hard to judge. You know, they got their brakes blown off against Georgia, who is a really good team, but doesn't maybe look like the Georgia of old with the struggle against Kentucky. And then they beat App State, but so did South Alabama. I mean, they blew out App State at home. So maybe that win ain't as good as it looked. NC State might be one of the only teams in the country that's worse than Florida State when you look at what they've done against any team with a pulse that they played, struggled against some FCS teams as well. So that game's a little bit hard to read. Now, they got Stanford on Saturday. Stanford did upset Syracuse, but Clemson should be heavily favored. I believe they're 20-plus point favorite in that one. Probably going to cover in that game. But we got to see what Florida State's going to do on Saturday night against SMU at 8 o'clock because they beat Cal, and you got some momentum. And sometimes that's all it takes to spark. I mean, we've seen the positivity there. And Doak sounded good. I have to give him credit. Like, on that Saturday night game, you know, I think Cal ended up having like 6 pre-snap penalties, a couple down in the red zone. You know, I don't want to even remotely compare it to this from one of FSU's biggest crowds in history, but it almost kind of felt like the 2011 Oklahoma game there for a while, where they got multiple pre-snap penalties down in the red zone because things were rocking. And so kudos to the fans that were in attendance and the crowd there at Doak that were making noise, even given the rough start that Florida State's had. So, you know, we're going to need all aspects against Clemson, and it may not go our way, but the crowd is not something that's going to rattle Clemson, but I mean, it can't hurt either. So that'll be big too. So before we jump into this, let me share a quick word from one of today's sponsors, and that is our friends over at Alumni Hall FSU. And look, no matter what game you're getting ready to head to, no matter what Florida State looks like this year, you can count on Alumni Hall FSU to get you looking right for FSU games. They have gear, tailgate supplies, hats. I have so many people ask me about the hats that I wear in the show. I get them from Alumni Hall FSU. Now, I can't always promise they're going to have the one that I'm wearing now because I got it a couple years ago, but they have like over 50 hats to choose from, and I really like a lot of their selection. So make sure you go check those guys out if you're in Tallahassee, 1415 Timberlane Road, or you can shop online, of course, at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page and make sure you save 10% with code SPEAR. So we appreciate you guys supporting those that support us. That's code SPEAR. Now, let's get into some of these post-Cal thoughts, some thoughts after Florida State got its first win of the season. And as we mentioned, this wasn't necessarily the prettiest win, but sometimes it just takes a win to really get a spark within a program. And at this point, it's better than a loss because, you know, really, they were desperate, man. There's no way around it. Like, this program, this fan base, this team was so desperate for any kind of positive momentum because really we had seen some effort issues from this team. And that is not anything that's a secret. That's not any breaking news. But I was pretty worried that if they fell to 0-4, which unfortunately would have been the second time they had done that under Mike Norvell. Now, we know the first time they fell to 0-4, they did actually kind of turn around and have a strong positive end of the season there. Now, the problem is your schedule is about to get a lot harder. But if they had fallen to 0-4, I was a little bit worried that they were going to kind of pack things in, right? And maybe you just, I don't know, maybe you do need to go youth movement at that point. Although I don't think you do it with your first road game and Clemson coming right on the back of that. But I think really what you have to take away from this Cal game, the number one overall takeaway was this was by far the best effort game that we've seen from this team all season. And I know that's sad to say, but playing hard really does make a difference, especially when you have some guys on this team that really are talented athletes. And when they give 100%, they can make a difference. And so it was big to see that when you see these guys do this, when you see these guys play up to their potential, this team can be pretty decent, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, when they get that win and when they see what doing that does for them and this team, that creates buy-in, that creates momentum, which are things that you can build on and things that you can carry forward. And again, like we said, you're going to need it because the schedule is about to get a lot harder. Now, one of the other nice things that I saw in this game was the veteran guys that needed to have a bounce back game did. Like, we saw Lawrence Toafili had the best running back game of FSU running back all season. And we know that he's had a couple of tough moments throughout the season with just questionable drops and things like that. Now, the tough conversation to have here is that we saw Roydell Williams get, you know, mentioned that he's going to be out during the Cal game. And then Mike Norvell followed that up saying that he's going to be out for a little bit of an extended period, about 4 to 6 weeks, almost through the rest of the season. And in a way, like, as respectfully as we can say this, I actually tweeted out before the game. I said, I think this is, you know, I hope he's okay first off, but could be a net positive for Florida State because he's just been really underwhelming this year. It's not quite what we expected. Obviously, the O-line issues have a lot to do with that, but he's really just not been a game breaker for Florida State, whereas we've seen Lawrence Toafili in the past. I mean, this guy is electric. He is a guy that can turn nothing into something, whether it's catching the ball or running it as a running back out of the backfield. And so you knew it was probably going to be a net positive to get Toafili more carries, and he had the most carries, over twice as many carries as he's had all season with 17 attempts, and he turned that into an 80-yard performance and a touchdown. So that was really, really good to see, kind of him have that bounce-back momentum game. I still don't think he's 100% healthy. So you're hoping that he can still be able to carry the load. Maybe you can mix in some Cam Davis there who, you know, he's still a freshman, man. I mean, he runs hard, but he doesn't make a lot of guys miss. So he's there. He's a good changeup in relief of Toa Fili to give him a breather. You know, I think you can also work in some guys like Kaziah Holmes, who, you know, after that drop screen pass, you really haven't seen much of him as well. Mekhi Dansey's another guy I'd like to see get involved. We did see Sam Singleton, didn't really do a whole lot, but that was his first carries of the season. So I suppose that with, you know, now Jalen Lucas being out, which really hurts your offense, with him and Roydo Williams being out, you're going to kind of see them work in more guys in that rotation throughout the remainder of the season. But I think it was really good to see him have a big game. And, you know, when you talk about that, it really helps this offense go when you can actually move the ball. And I want to save that for the offensive talk. So just good to see him have a bounce back game along with Ja'Kai Douglas. You know, these were two of Florida State's veteran playmakers who had their struggles. We saw the bad missed block on the perimeter last week against Memphis, or 2 weeks ago against Memphis, by Ja'Kai Douglas, where it got Jaylen Brown blown up. And that was, man, that was tough to watch. Like, that was just plain pour out effort. And so you were kind of wondering where his head was at, right? And so to see him come back and have his best game so far this season, have the touchdown catch, that was really good to see as well. And then, of course, you got to talk about hashtag Freedom Youngins. You got to talk about the emergence of some of these young, talented players. And I think, first off, you got to talk about Quindarius Jones, man, coming in and really having a great game in the secondary there. Was really kind of locked down, made a lot of really good plays in coverage. And so I think this is a guy that you're really going to be able to build off of. He's someone that we heard about all through camp. And that's not to say some of the veteran guys aren't good. Maybe you haven't seen such like a very special year so far from Fentrell Cypress, but not bad. Just, you also haven't had a lot of passing teams either. Now, they still gave up 300 yards passing, so there's still some areas to clean up there, but I think it was really big to see him. That's going to be a guy who's going to be special for you going forward. And then, of course, obviously, you got to talk about Edwin Joseph, who came in, had a pick, had a big sack to basically end the game there. So, man, you're seeing the veteran guys kind of have bounce back moments in this Cal game. And then you're also seeing the young guys step up and make big plays in big moments. So maybe they're not going full on youth movement, but they are working in some of the better, more talented young guys who they trust to be ready to play in game situations. And they're showing up on the big stage. And so that is very encouraging to see. Now, let's talk about the positive first, because we haven't had a whole lot of positive to talk about this season. So we want to start there, of course. And that's the FSU defense. Now, I have to tip my cap to Adam Fuller, like, and this defensive staff. They have found something on defense. This is the defense that we expected to see this season, kind of. Like, they still got some things they have to get cleaned up. I don't think Cal is a really dynamic offense. I mean, they only put up 21 against Auburn with 5 turnovers in that game. But they're still a good running team. They still have a solid set of skill guys there. But this is a night and day difference defense than what we saw the first 2 weeks of the season. And when you go back and watch the film, they are doing so much better in so many different areas. You know, first off, they did take a big step versus Memphis. They held them to under 100 rushing yards after giving up so many yards, over 200 yards, well, 190 against Georgia Tech and over 200 against Boston College. So they're doing a lot better there. When they faced Memphis, and then they built on that in Cal. Like, you were hoping that wasn't a one-off performance, and they actually got better against a little bit better offense. So that alone is something that they can build off of. And the thing is with this defense is, like, they're not perfect. They still have some things that got to get cleaned up. But this defense, if they keep playing like they are and they keep cleaning up these little things, they're going to be good enough to keep Florida State in some of these games throughout the season. I mean, when you look, they've only allowed 2 touchdowns in the past 8 quarters after giving up 7 in the first 8 quarters of the season. That is a big improvement. And really, when you look at Memphis and Cal's offense, it's probably just about as good as Boston College and Georgia Tech. Now, of course, the difference here is that you didn't have mobile quarterbacks like you did the first 2 seasons, so they were able to play things a little bit differently. And talking about that, they have generated 34 quarterback pressures and 10 sacks in the past 2 games. That's huge. I mean, that is, you know, I talked about in this Cal game, I thought that the way that Florida State, their one window of opportunity to win this game was through the pressure department and getting pressure on Mendoza, because he was a guy that kind of folded under pressure in the past that we've seen. And so they did that. They came through. And really, I think when you see what they're able to do in the pressure game, the interesting part will be to see what they do this week against SMU, because, you know, the quarterback that they have there, they have made a change. And so now Kevin Jennings, he is a more mobile guy, maybe not quite a Thomas Castellanos type of dangerous guy, but he can run on you. So they're probably going to have to switch back to playing defense, you know, defending that mobile quarterback the way they did in the first two games. And hopefully that doesn't translate into playing defense like they did in the first two games, but they have definitely figured something out. Now, of course, Clemson, that's not a mobile guy there. So you have some things, but you have some more mobile quarterbacks coming up on the schedule. So they're going to have to figure out how to balance these two things out. But I think a lot of it really comes down to your defensive line is playing like the defensive line that we thought they could be. I mean, you just look at the run game. After giving up 453 rushing yards in the first two games, they have more than cut that in half to just 172 in the last two games. 107 against Cal. I think it was like 61 against Memphis. So, I mean, the rush defense alone has gotten a ton better. And like I said, first off, that starts with the defensive line, right? They are worlds better than what we saw them in the first two games. Now, with the defensive line, it was never really the defensive tackles, right? Joshua Farmer wasn't great, but he played hard in the first couple of games. Daryl Jackson has not been special. He has not been what we maybe thought he could be. You know, there was times with with Daryl Jackson where it's like, okay, he has stretches where he's very good. He has stretches where he's just kind of average for his size, for what he should be. But if you watch the film in the first two games, there were so many double teams by the opponents where they knew if they took away your two massive defensive tackles that you basically got nothing from the defensive ends and you had no help behind them. So as long as they take out that part, you know, like a big iron gate to a castle or something, like as long as you can take that out, you can pretty much get inside and do what you want. And so that's what they were doing. And what's really, really changed has been the play from your defensive ends, at least in this game, not in the Memphis game, but in the Cal game, your defensive ends came to play this time. And I don't know who's responsible for this, but I got to give them credit that the linebackers look so much better. But let's talk about those defensive linemen real quick. Josh Farmer, first off, is playing like an animal uncaged, man. He is a nightmare to offensive linemen right now. He actually leads all FBS defensive tackles in pressures over the past two games. And I still think, you know, when you look at the rotation next to him, that they're being serviceable at least. And so as long as Josh Farmer keeps playing like he is, he's going to really wreak havoc on offenses. And so you really need that. And that's really good to see, because that's who we expected him to be this season. Now, Pat Payton, I got to give him credit too. Like, he has been an utter disappointment this season. But man, he looked like he tried pretty hard in this game. He brought the effort, and it turned into a good game for him. Had a career high 3.5 tackles, 3 sacks against Cal. He was in the right place a lot of times. He saved you the game on that shoestring tackle there where Cal was going. I mean, had nothing but green grass and touchdown pylons, end zone pylons there between Florida State's win and loss. And so he saved the game for you at one point. So you hope again that this continues to build on to that. Now, Marvin Jones Jr., look, man, he has done virtually nothing through the first three games, and it has been a big disappointment. But he had a pretty good game this one. His rush defense was pretty good in this one. And then he also had some good pressures there. I think he had 2 sacks or something like that in this one as well. So it was good to see him play well in this game, because that's a guy that you had some questions on whether the effort was going to be there or not coming out of Georgia, but you also knew that he had that potential if he could just play 100% and play up to that potential. And they've said that, like, he has looked so much happier, you know, just smiling and more motivated around the facility. Now, it shouldn't have taken you 3 bad games to get there. I mean, it is what it is. You can call it that. But if you can get him to play like he did against Cal the rest of the season, this defensive line can be pretty daggone good. And that can really open some things up for this defense. So Again, just a good outing from the entire defensive line, which was very encouraging to see. Now, like I said, the linebackers are even doing a lot better, man. They are actually filling gaps. They are actually attacking downhill. Cam Riley looked much better in his run fits in this game. I thought DJ Lundy actually covered pretty decent in this game. You know, he had the injury during camp where he was held out for a long time. I don't know if maybe he's finally getting healthy now, and that's something that we're seeing where he's able to move better in space. But I mean, you got to give it to him. And you know, there was the one play where Blake Nicholson gave up the big pass, but man, that tight end for Cal is not, he's only a tight end by definition. That is a playmaking wide receiver, right? And basically, and so that was a tough ask. I mean, it was a great throw and a great catch, and Cal's allowed to make plays too. I mean, that's the thing. These other teams, they have guys on scholarship. They're allowed to make plays too, but I think they really have something in Blake Nicholson and Justin Crier. And so if you take those two with a better performing Cam Riley and DJ Lundy, at least from the run fit side of things, I think your front seven is starting to look more like what we expected. And that's going to go a really long way to Florida State's defense this season. Now, the secondary, touching on them, of course, we talked about the young guys earlier. Man, you got to see more of them because they played well. Of course, you also know that they recently announced Earl Little Jr. is moving back to safety. I think that's a good move. Mike Norvell talked about how you see some Jamie Robinson-esque type of things from him, where maybe he plays better attacking downhill than covering one-on-one in space. So hopefully you can get more out of him there. But, you know, again, keep in mind with that transition, he's a multi-year transfer. So as long as he stays around, he's got multiple years in the system to learn to play that position. But I still think the secondary has been pretty good. Now, there are things that need to get cleaned up. They allowed 5 pass plays over 20 yards. Again, en route to giving up 303 yards through the air. So not the greatest game by the secondary, but by all means, not a bad game either. You also had the interception by Edwin Joseph. But really, when you look at them, when you look at this defense and how far they've come, it is massively big how much better they've gotten over the last 2 weeks. And even then, I think a lot of the mistakes here are fixable. You know, a lot of it was never this team was getting out physical. They weren't getting out run. It was just at times lack of effort. It is what it is, man. And then there was also a lot of miscommunications that were really just killing this defense. So a lot of this stuff is fixable. Like, you still have some missed tackles. The tackling has gotten better. You still have some crucial missed tackles that you just got to make that would have changed a lot of the outcome of this game. That you're still missing. So you can clean those types of things up. And then the communication issues have gotten better, but they're still an issue, right? You still saw some things where guys communicating, passing guys off. There were also some mistakes that just come with playing younger players. You know, when you look at some of the safeties, they're working in guys like Jabril Rawls. They're working in KJ Kirkland at safety. So they got a lot of these younger guys that are being worked in on the defense here. Sometimes they just take bad angles. These safeties are too far inside and let guys get outside of them. So, like, you have some opportunity to go back on film and look at that and correct it. But you're seeing these young guys, man, they're sticking their nose in there. They're playing hard. And those are things that can be cleaned up. Now, will it come back to bite you at some point? Probably so, against the better competition that you're going to play. But a lot of these things are fixable. And so if you can continue to get better, I mean, if you saw how, you know, I'm still of the belief that the Georgia Tech game was kind of like taking an unexpected punch in the face, right? Like Mike Tyson always says, you know, you got to plan until you get punched in the face. Then I think BC was a big hangover. Then you saw them get better against Memphis, and then they took another step against Cal. So if you can continue to correct the mistakes and get better on defense, you know, this defense can really keep you in a lot of games here. And, you know, it's kind of crazy, actually, when you look at some of the advanced metrics. And look, I don't make these metrics, so they sound crazy to me, too, but they are what they are. I'm just reading you the numbers. So in the F-plus rankings, which are S&P plus and FEI rankings, which are more like opponent-adjusted and pace of play, because, again, man, like, you still have to look at what some of these teams are doing. Yeah, they look great on the stat sheet and on paper, but they haven't played anybody. You know, I mean, look at – and by all means, listen, I'm not talking trash about Miami. They're miles better than we are this year. They played a bad Florida team and then a bunch of nobodies. And so when you look at that, they're just like, Florida State hasn't really played anybody that I would say is quote unquote good, right? But they haven't really played any bad teams yet. You know, everyone they've played so far has been pretty okay, pretty average to above average on the broad spectrum of college football. So when you get into the opponent and pace of play adjusted, it just kind of couches for that, you know, as teams will start to get into their conference schedule and things like that. And according to the F plus rankings, Florida State actually has the number 25 ranked defense. It sounds crazy. I don't know that I believe it, maybe in the last game or two, but that's what it says, man. And so if they can just keep building onto that, I think they're going to be in good shape. It'll keep them in some games this year. The thing that worries me here is that they're going to be put to the test. You know, again, like we said, Cal was not a great offense by any means. They weren't bad, but they weren't great. But you have five top 25 scoring offenses coming up in the next six games. When you look at SMU, you look at Miami, you got Clemson, and you got UNC coming up. So you got five of your next six opponents with a top 25 scoring offense. Duke is the only outlier that is not. So they're going to be put to the test. And so they're going to need to continue to get better. And you also got a couple of mobile quarterbacks coming in there too, which we know Florida State typically struggles with, which most teams do. So anyway, I mean, it's positive. Like, you got to tip your cap to these guys because this defense played hard. They played physical. They played aggressive. And, you know, it really paid off for Florida State. Now, well, we can talk a little bit of positive about the offense. I was about to say, I don't want to be completely negative here. There's some negative to be said about this offense, but I also do want to talk about the little bit of positives first, because I don't think it was all terrible from the offense. So let's start with that. FSU did go another week. I mean, look, here's the thing. There were some little things, right? Little breadcrumbs, little tea leaves that you could see that where Florida State's offense did get better this week against Cal. The problem is you went another week without scoring over 20 points, and you have still yet to cross the 300-yard mark of total offense all season. So this offense is still putrid. Don't get me wrong there. And just like with the defense in their upcoming test, what worries me the most about this offense is that when we go back to those F-plus ranked defenses, so far this season, you have faced the 94th ranked defense in Memphis, the 87th ranked in Georgia Tech, 54th in BC, and 33rd against Cal. And so really, I mean, again, remember, 21 points, 13 points, 12 points, and 14 points. You're averaging 15 points a game. You are like in the mid-120s, I think 126 in scoring offense. So you got to figure out how to get these points, like how to get these small improvements to transition into points. What worries me is, just like we talked about with the defense, how you haven't faced a lot of great offenses, but it's coming. You've hit the meat of your schedule now, so it's coming on defense too. In the next four games, you face the 38th ranked defense in SMU, 17th in Clemson, 27th in Duke, and 16th in Miami. So you're going to be tested, and this offense has to take a big leap fast. And I don't know that that's going to happen. Now, SMU, you know, to me, SMU, they played Nevada. They played Houston Christian or Houston Baptist or something like that. So, you know, they still gave up, 45 points to TCU. So it's going to be interesting to see, like, if Florida State doesn't put up 20 points on SMU, let's be honest, guys, I would not be the least bit surprised to see you get held to like three or even shut out against Clemson and Miami. It is what it is. Like, you got to find a way to move this ball and get some points. Granted, you got good kickers, but you may run into a Cal type of situation where, you know, maybe you move the ball a little bit, but I don't know that you're just going to score on Clemson and Miami's defense. So that does worry me. I really think when it comes down to Clemson, man, that I just don't think you're going to be able to block that defensive line. I think that's going to be your biggest problem there, regardless of, you know, obviously you see what Georgia did to their offense. And I'm not saying that you have Georgia's defense by any means, but you can probably consider yourself better than App State and NC State on defense if you play like you did against Cal. So you can probably hold them to not scoring 50, 60 points. I just don't know that you're going to score more than 10 points on them because of the way that defensive line is. They are going to eat your offensive line for lunch unless you get some things figured out real quick. Now, having Atkins back obviously helps. Byers hopefully can come back soon. And I really like what you're seeing from Jalen Early. He's a young guy that can continue to get experience for you. But again, man, like I said, you got some really tough defenses coming up that you're going to have to face, and you have not scored points against some not great defenses. And again, at least you can say Cal was in the top 35 but none of the others were even in the top 50. And so that is a big concern there. But again, while that defense will keep you in a lot of games, scoring an average of 15 points per game isn't going to win many of those games. So you have to figure out a way to get points. And I think the crazy thing is, like, when you go back and you watch this game against Cal, yes, they only put up 14 points. I get that. But Florida State, really, when you really watch this game, they were a bad holding call. The one where TJ Ferguson got called for a holding on a screen play in the red zone that would have put the ball, I think, inside the 10. Florida State probably goes down and gets a touchdown there. Look, the guy got pancaked. He just got owned, and it was a terrible call. Shout out ACC refs doing ACC ref things, being terrible as usual. Another crappy call, as the ACC stands for. So you get hosed on a call there, and then that backs it up, and DJ ends up throwing a pick on a really ugly pass where he didn't trust what he saw. He was late on the throw, and it turns into a negative play for you, whereas it probably could have turned into a touchdown. Then you also have the one where you missed the deep shot. Again, this is another week where we saw Malik Benson get over the top of the defense. Now, they did hit the one against Memphis, but this is another time where you saw a receiver get open over the top, and DJ just misses them. And then I think, you know, the bad fourth down decision. And again, like, look, I understand what Mike Norvell says with the analytics. I think on the third down play, you should have done a different play selection, right? You should have tried to run the ball, get you a few yards, make that field goal around 48, 50. I think they said it was 55, 56 or something like that, which, I mean, again, you know, Ryan Fitzgerald is 100% on field goals over 50 yards this season. Your fourth down conversions are at 66%. If you want to talk about numbers and odds, 100 sounds better than 66. I mean, I'm no mathematician there, but that sounds a little bit better. You bump that close to under 50, you kick the field goal, you get the points. So with that being said, when you look at those little things, and there's more opportunities there, again, where they run like a max middle blitz against you, and instead of DJ hitting Toa Philly, I believe it was over the middle, which probably goes for six late in the game, you end up taking a sack. And so those little types of things, because DJ, man, so far, and we're going to talk about DJ in a second, but so far he has not really shown the moxie to stand in the pocket, take a shot, and deliver a pass. But when you look at that, they realistically should have, this could have been, and I get it, you know, coulda, woulda, shouldas don't mean anything at the end of the game if you don't take advantage of it. Could have been about a 31-point game here. Like, Florida State really seriously should have won this game 31-9-ish, really 31-6, because the, you know, the going forward on fourth down there, instead of kicking the field goal, you gave them an opportunity to go down and get 3 points. So you really could have won this game like about 31-6, maybe even 38-6. But that the one with the blitz over the middle, that's a big ask. That's a very hypothetical type of situation there. But there was a couple of real gimmies there that I think Florida State could have got to 31 points. The problem is, the excuses don't matter. You have to figure out how to overcome those setbacks and turn those into opportunities. You know, when you got that penalty, when you got backed up, you know, I understand Mike Norvell's big on analytics, and that's great. You can be aggressive all you want. Analytics are a thing in modern college football. I don't know how the analytics account for your team having the worst offense in the Power Four. I just don't. Like, you have to know your team. You have to read the room and know what you're good at and what you're not. When you were backed up that far, you probably weren't going to convert that anyway. So why not just move it closer and then take the points? Because when you're struggling to score, at the end of the day, you need to take some points, especially when your defense is playing well. So that's the thing that's killing FSU right now, is any kind of little mistake, and they just cannot recover from it. And so, you know, that went from 31 points down to 14. And so there are going to be games where you're not going to win with 14 points. You're going to need all of those opportunities that you're wasting. And so that's going to come back to bite you. So you have to figure that out. But again, like, some of the things that I saw that got better with Alex Atkins being back on the sideline, even though the point total didn't change, I thought Florida State's offense did have probably its best game of the season, right? They looked a lot better. They looked more coordinated. You know, they didn't run counter great, but it's probably the best they've run it all season. You saw some inside zone opportunities that actually turned out pretty well. The offensive line had a pretty decent push in this game as well. And all of that led to Florida State breaking the 100-yard mark on the ground for the first time this season. They had 107 total, But if you go back and you adjust for that negative 20-yard sequence at the end, 25-yard sequence where they kneeled the ball down, they actually ran for about 132 yards. So that's actually the best they've had all season. And, you know, if you think back to the Trouble in the Trenches episode that we did recently, and I do suggest you guys go watch that, Florida State is 6-19 since 2017 in games where they were held under 100 yards. And they haven't rushed for over 100 yards this season. Now, in Georgia Tech, they had 98. Sack adjusted was just barely over 100. But you didn't play good defense, not like you did this time. And you didn't really have a passing game that was effective either. So it's 6-19 in games where you held under 100 yards since 2017. And now the first one of the season that you break triple digits, you get your first win. So obviously, like, the things that we talked about in that episode are spot on. It's just kind of the proof. It's backing up what we talked about in that episode. So again, like, you have to be, if you're not going to have a dynamic passing game, Lord knows we don't, you got to win with defense and running the ball. And if you're getting held to 21 yards like Boston College and 32 yards like Memphis, you're not going to win. And you didn't. So if you can get to that triple digit mark and you can play defense like you've seen, that can lead to some success, but you're going to have to figure something out in the passing game as well. Now, the pass blocking wasn't great. You still allowed 42.4% of dropbacks to be under pressure this game. And again, we talked about this in that episode with the trenches, like the most successful teams in, you know, around you, like a Georgia or a Clemson, which were our comparison teams in that episode there. They rarely have a pressure percentage over 30%, and Florida State is consistently over 40%. So you got to figure out how to clean up some of these pressures, because really when you look at DJ, his numbers under pressure aren't super terrible. His completion percentage is like 61.6%, two touchdowns, I think one pick. So he's better when he's not under pressure, and that's not a newsflash. That's every quarterback. So if you give him time, he can be less bad, right? But a lot of that has to do with how long he holds the ball. I mean, he gets, on average, over 2.5, almost 3 seconds to make these plays. And in modern college football, you got to be quick, man. You got to make those reads. So a lot of it is on DJ, without a doubt. But, you know, you can clean some things up there, too. To touch on the receivers, I think they did look better in this game. As a unit, they recorded a 66.7 reception percentage and only had one drop. Kyle Moorlock, come on, man. Stop being more drop, start being more lock. We got to get you to catch these balls. Now, he did have a couple of, I think he had 3 for 21 in that game. So he did make some catches for you, but the drops are still killing you because, again, that was about a 20-yard drop on a crucial down. I think it might have even been third down when he dropped that pass. So you just got to come through in the big moments. But by far, this was their best. When you just look at those two metrics, the reception percentage and the drops, this was their best game since Georgia Tech from those two metrics. And then again, when you talk about the running game, like we said, you saw the best game so far there from Toa Philly this season, 17 carries, 80 yards and a touchdown. So you really hopefully see him get a bulk of the carries going forward, mixed in with some of the other guys to give him some rest. But he needs to be on the field all the time. And again, you know, to touch on Florida State and where they're at right now, we did see some changes to the depth chart, right? You do see, obviously, Toa Philly and Cam Davis are your two starters there. Hakeem Williams moves into the starting role as the wide receiver here, along with Ja'Kai Douglas and Malik Benson. Malik Benson does share an oar with Jaylen Brown. Look, I mean, Jaylen Brown, he's still only a redshirt freshman. He only played 12 snaps at LSU. So he's a guy that just doesn't have a lot of experience yet. And I think when you look at that older wide receiver group, Portier, Deuce Spann, Darion Williamson, when you look at all those guys, there's probably a reason that they're not breaking the depth chart over a redshirt freshman that comes in, right? And that's disappointment. And we talked about concern with the receivers this year until you brought in Malik Benson. And I don't necessarily even think Malik Benson, maybe he's not been what we thought, but I think a lot of it's on the quarterback. Again, you see times where he gets behind guys. Maybe he's not as special as we thought, but he gets behind the defense and DJ just misses him. So, you know, a lot of that's on the quarterback. But again, you have a veteran receiving core. And we talked about this early on, right, in the season where you just don't have anyone special this year at wide receiver. But that doesn't mean you don't have a couple of solid guys that you can get on the field pending your limitations with quarterback. And so now you see Hakeem Williams, Ja'Kai Douglas, and Malik Benson as your 1-2-3 there. And I actually feel pretty good about that. Like, I think that's probably your best lineup. You just, you know, with Hakeem, I think he needed a game or two to get back up to game speed. So that is encouraging there because, you know, again, like, you do have some guys that you feel pretty good about as far as that goes on the offensive side of the ball. And so now, with that being said, let's get to the quarterback issue, because this is the negative part of the show. And we've tried to be positive through most of this, but again, there's still some negative to talk about. Florida State has a quarterback problem, period. We know that. It's no surprise to anyone who watches these games on Saturday. Like I talked about, the offense seemed to make small improvements, right? In the run game and what the O-line is doing. I thought the receivers were better. The quarterback play still seems to be like a ball and chain on this offense. It still seems to be like an anchor that is weighing this offense down. The problem is you're just not getting what you need from that position. And when you have an offensive line that struggles, when you have receivers that aren't quote-unquote special, right, you don't have NFL type of wide receivers, at least not right now. I mean, Hakeem can still get there. You got to have a quarterback who can elevate that position group. And you're just not getting – he's not helping the offensive line. He's not helping the receivers. He's not helping the run game. And he's, frankly, not good enough in the pass game. And so, again, it's just kind of like the anchor that is holding this offense back. And so I thought some of the play calling was better on Saturday. I think when you look in the first half, they actually pushed the pace a little bit, which I think made the offense look a little bit better there. I actually liked what I saw when they tried to push the pace there a little bit. I know that Cal had some comms issue in the helmet, and so maybe it looked like Florida State, you know, when one goes down, the other can't go down. So maybe they didn't spend as much time in the comms, and they were just like, look, let's just go. And so I think that did help. It didn't translate into any points, but at the same time, I thought when you can push the tempo, maybe that means they're getting a better understanding of the offense a little bit. But, you know, I like things like the reverse early in that game. The problem that I have right now with the offensive play calling is they are still repeatedly force-feeding things to DJ that he's just not good at, and that is namely running RPO. He does not read these plays very well at all, and he had a few very egregious misreads. And I mean, most of you can think of the one, I think it was either Hakeem or Jalen out wide, where you had Jalen Brown like 6 to 8 yards of cushion there, where, man, you just hike it, your read crashed down on the run, so it was an instant throw. Man, you don't even have to fake the run. You could just catch that thing, feed it out wide on a rope, on a frozen rope, and you get 6-8 yards, you get upfield. Instead, he drags out the longest handoff in the history of handoffs, almost drags his knee on the ground, almost turned into a sack almost, and then it turns out to be a negative play. These are the things that just cannot happen, right? He just doesn't read a lot of these right on these RPOs. You know, there is, like DJ, if you're watching this, the P in RPO stands for pass. You can throw the ball too. It is allowed. It is legal in Tallahassee. So that is a problem too. Doesn't always make the right runs on or the reads on the read options. And frankly, when you look at what defenses, if you're reading a defense or if you're the defense reading this offense, first off, you don't respect DJ in the run game because one, he almost never keeps it. He almost always hands the ball off on read option. Two, when he does run the ball, which is usually not on read option plays, he looks like he's running in quicksand. And it is, I think that might be one of the single most frustrating things about DJ this season. And I don't know if it's injury related because he wears the brace in practice, he wears the leg sleeve in games. You know, we knew he was semi-inaccurate. Maybe the deep ball, the lack of the deep ball is probably the most disappointing thing, but he just moves so slow running the ball, making reads, getting the ball out on time. But the run game is just really disappointing because he was never a burner at Clemson. He was never Jordan Travis. He was never that real shifty guy. But he actually ran the ball for like 500-600 yards, over 100 times on the season, both years at Clemson. And so, like, it's not the same guy. Now, I was talking to a Clemson friend of mine actually last night, and he was telling me that that DJ did sustain a knee injury towards the end of his career at Clemson, I believe it was. And so maybe there's just something that's lingering there. I don't know. I don't want to suspect on anything, but you're just not getting any help in the run game either. And for me, that alone, like, first off, let's back it up to this, but like with him not being able to run RPO effectively, first off, why are we still calling this? You have to almost go, like we talked about this before, you almost have to go 2-minute offense with DJ. Like, you have to give him one read, or like the slot fade to Ja'Kai. Like, man, you hike the ball. Now, I know he missed the wheel route that was wide open to Toa Fili on that play. I get it. But he made a good read, and he made a good throw to Ja'Kai for the touchdown. But that was a hike it, put the ball on a spot. You don't have to read it. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to trust what you're seeing. Second guessing yourself, you just got to go. But the problem with that is, first off, Mike Norvell is not helping his quarterback. You have to call this offense based on things that he can do, not things you want him to do, but he's not successful at. And then two, like, why are we wasting time trying to teach a fifth-year quarterback basic offensive concepts when he's only got 8 games left here? He's only got a little over 2 months left in Garnet and Gold, and we're still wasting time trying to teach him this offense. You can teach Brock Glenn that stuff. And, you know, as painful as it was, I went back and watched only the pass attempts in the Georgia game because I didn't really need to see much else. But when you watch Brock Glenn, man, his legs are a difference maker. There are some times where, you know, Georgia had him dead to rights in the backfield, and he just turned it into something positive with his legs. And that is not something that you get from DJ right now. Not only that, but when it comes to like a 3rd and short or DJ's running, either A, he's clumsy, and that looks to be the case, or B, he's not really that invested in putting his shoulder down and trucking somebody for someone who's 6'4", 250. The effort to gain those extra yards just doesn't seem to be there. And that's a problem. When you have a guy who isn't fast enough or shifty enough to make guys miss, and he's also not willing to use what his God-given ability is, which is size, to run somebody over and get those extra yards, man, you're just not getting what you need there. And like I said, when you watch Brock Glenn on film, I don't think anybody suspects that Brock Glenn is going to come in and be the savior of this offense, right? I don't think that people expect Brock Glenn to come in and go, you know, 28 of 30 for 350, 3 touchdowns, and also run it for 100 yards. He's not Jordan Travis. That's not who Brock Glenn is. But you can't tell me that he is not. I know they say DJ looks better in practice, and I get that. But practice doesn't matter on Saturdays. What matters on Saturdays is who is going out and getting things done. And right now, that's not DJ, okay? It's just not. You're averaging 15 points a game. This is the worst offense Mike Norvell has ever had. And he actually just doubled down on DJ being the starter for the, you know, foreseeable future, which is really maddening if you're an FSU fan, because you're watching this product and you're saying to yourself, like, man, this is not working. This guy is not going to be here next year. And you're continuing to flounder on offense with a guy that there's no point in investing the time in. And again, man, this isn't like, I'm sure DJ's a nice guy, and this isn't a bash on him as a person. This is more just like, man, you're trying to win games. And I know Mike Norvell, for some reason, is convinced that DJ is the guy that can give them the best chance to win games. 15 points a game ain't going to do it. And I'm not saying that Brock Glenn's going to come in and light the world up, but you have a guy who's going to be here in the future to help you fix this. You have a guy that offers you mobility. You have a guy that has moxie in the pocket, because, man, I tell you what, you go back and watch the 2 games that he played in at the end of last year, he is not scared to stand in there and take a shot and sling that thing downfield. He's just not. And some of his passes are pretty nice. You know, again, you go back and you look at those 2 games, there were so many drops in that game. And some of those were on the quarterback, but a lot of this is DJ too. Like, when you look at a lot of the incompletions for DJ, like, one, he's not very accurate. Like, he doesn't hit guys in stride very often to give them an opportunity to make plays after the catch. He makes it hard on guys to catch. Like, we give Morlock a lot of crap about a lot of his drops, but a lot of those, you're having to stretch out, you're having to jump, you're having to go all the way to the extent of your catch range to even have a chance to bring these in. And that's just not, like, you're not helping an average receiver group. So to me, again, I'm 100% in favor of making a change at quarterback. I mean, you see where Oklahoma just benched their quarterback. You see where Florida's at least given Lagway different looks throughout different drives in the game. I don't see why Brock can't get a couple packages. You know, again, I don't know that he's going to come in and be the savior, but he can do some things that the current quarterback cannot do. And you're also, you're going to be giving, you're going to be growing with the future of your program. Right now, Luke Kromenhawk is probably what we all most feel is the future of this program. He is the best quarterback, the highest ceiling on this roster right now. I'm not putting him behind this offensive line because I don't want to get him hurt and stunt his development. Now, he can start the Charleston Southern game to get some experience. I think he's going to be your quarterback in 2025, but we need to see what we got in Brock Glenn. We need to see if this is, you know, what kind of quarterback competition we can expect. Do you need to maybe go out and get another transfer just for depth next year? I know you have Trevor Jackson on the roster too. It was kind of a late addition there. So, man, you just need to see what you got in Brock. And he's played in some big game atmospheres, in the ACC championship game, in the bowl game. Again, it wasn't the greatest performance, but he wasn't getting a whole lot of help from around him either. You know, the offensive line was giving up pressure at a 40 to 50% pressure rate there. His drops were in like the 20% in both of those games. So he was getting no help there either. But man, I just think you're not getting enough from the position to not at least make the change because, you know, at least you could get some help in the run game. You could get some help moving the pocket and helping these receivers get open and helping this offensive line with their pressures, you know, and really when it comes down to where you may see the switch, Mike Norvell, again, like we talked about in his press conference, he basically doubled down on DJ. I think when you look at that Cal game, when you look at all these games, like really other than Boston College, Florida State has been in, air quotes, in these games. And DJ is not a guy, we've talked about this before, he's not a guy that's going to go out and win you games. He's not going to put the game on his arm and win you games, but he doesn't necessarily lose you games either. Now, maybe he does lose you by lack of production, but I think Mike is probably scared to put in Brock Glenn in a close game, and if things go poorly, then you second-guess yourself that you just cost yourself the game. Me personally, and again, like none of us watching this, none of us talking about this, we don't make the decisions. We don't get paid to make the decisions. Maybe we should. Small consulting fee. You can put us on the staff. We'll tell you that DJ's not good. I'm sure they should know that already. But I think the first time you're going to see a different quarterback this season is probably in the Clemson game. And I think that's going to be in garbage time. You know, you look at last week against NC State, they were up 42-7, 45-7 at halftime. And then you saw NC State. Now, they made a quarterback change, too. Grayson McCall got hurt. They brought in their I think, redshirt freshman back up, and they ended up putting up 35 points, and, you know, because they scored a lot in garbage time because Clemson does like to play a lot of their players when they get up ahead. So, you know, that if that's a 2 or 3 or 4 score game late in the game, I think then you may see Brock Glenn go in against Clemson's backups. And so then you can kind of start to read how he is, how prepared he is. And then you go into a bye week, and then you have Duke. So I really think there's no way that you're going to put Brock Glenn in right now on the road against SMU, then against Clemson, against that defense, again, where, like, your offensive line is going to really struggle to block them. So you probably don't want to get him hurt there. You want to let DJ kind of wear that one against his old team. And, you know, hey, maybe he plays out of his mind in that game because he has some, you know, some angst against Dabo or something. I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen. But I think if you get into garbage time there, Florida State's down like, say, you know, 31-10 in the fourth quarter, then I think you'll probably see Brock. And if they were going to make a change, I think you do it in the back half of that season. Because if you lose to SMU and then you lose to Clemson, I mean, at that point, you know, you're 1-5. And so you're pretty much out of everything, right? I don't know that you're going to be able to – you can't expect to beat Miami and Notre Dame when you can't beat SMU and you can't beat Memphis, who just lost to Navy. So you're probably out of a bowl contention there too. You're out of the ACC picture completely. I mean, you still only have 2 ACC losses, which is, you know, kind of crazy that you're actually middle of the pack in the ACC right now, because a lot of teams haven't played, started their conference schedule yet, at least not very in, deep in those games. So I think that may be where you see the change, but I think you're definitely going to see DJ start the next 2 games, and that's going to be disappointing. Now, I know they said they feel like they're knocking on the door of finding offensive success. And I know most Florida State fans would prefer to lock him out of that door and let somebody in the back door and try a different quarterback. But, you know, it is what it is, man. Again, we don't get to make the decisions. So, you know, again, if you want to do the best that you can with DJ, because obviously Mike Norvell is going to be stubborn here. You got to continue to get better on offense. The offensive line has to get better. Like we said, he's pretty decent, pretty less bad in a clean pocket. And then when you don't drop all the passes, it does help. I mean, again, you have to convert the opportunities into positive plays. I mean, you look at the screen pass that they got called back. You look at the drop by Morlock. He probably has around 200 yards if you get both of those things to stand. But again, man, I mean, right now he currently ranks 99th in QBR, 95th in EPA, 89th in PFF pass grade, 227th in NFL passer rating among FBS quarterbacks, and he's given you nothing in the running game. So you got a bad quarterback and a coach who refuses to make the switch. And that, I'm not going to say that because DJ is playing and Brock Glenn is not. I don't know that that means Brock can't play. I just don't know that Mike wants to put him into another unfair situation like he did in last year at the end of last season when he had no choice. But man, you just can't continue to flounder like this on offense because your defense is actually playing pretty well now. And so you're going to waste a lot of defensive efforts as you only score 15 points a game. So you got to figure out something, man, because again, like you feel like you did have some improvements on offense, but the points just still aren't there. I mean, again, 13, 12, and 14 in the last three games, if you're not going to score over 20 points a game, you're probably not going to win many more games the rest of the season. So you got to figure something out or you got to make a change. And I just don't know if that's going to happen before, at a minimum, after the Clemson game. So we'll see what happens. But that's some of the things I saw from after the Cal game. I think you have to be really excited about what you're seeing from your defense, especially if they can continue to build onto that. You know, some of the videos and stuff that you saw coming out of the locker room after this game, this team was the most encouraged that they've been. So you hope you can build onto that too. I think the offense did have some small things here with being able to run the ball better. The receivers looked a little bit better. But you still got a boat anchor for a quarterback that is holding you back. And so, I don't know, guys. There's nothing we can do about that. There's really not until Mike Norvell makes a change or just maybe a light switch flips. And, you know, I wouldn't bet the farm on that happening because it hasn't happened yet for a guy who's in his fifth year of college football. So let's talk a little bit about SMU now as well, because we're going to get into a full-on preview on Friday when Michael is back. We're going to talk about this. We're going to preview that full SMU game on our normal episode. But before we do that, let me bring you a quick word from today's other sponsor, and that is our friends over at the Autograph app. And look, these guys offer you podcasts, YouTube videos, social media content, articles. All of our stuff is on there too. You're listening to the Plant the Spear podcast right now. But if you were to do that in the Autograph app, you can get rewarded with fan coins that you can use for merchandise, discounted tickets. Speaking of, they have tickets right there in the app that don't charge fees. And man, the only thing that might make me more aggravated than watching DJU play quarterback is paying ridiculous fees on tickets. So make sure you go over there and check those guys out. They got the stress-free, no-free tickets or no-fee tickets right there in the app. So make sure you guys check those out. That is the Autograph app. I'll link it below to make it easy on you guys. So let's do a quick look at SMU here, because I do think this is a game that Florida State can win. Now, will they? I don't know. The last game made me a little bit nervous seeing them put up all them points. Real quick note here, the pep band for the Marching Chiefs is not going to be traveling due to the storm. They just put that news out today on Wednesday. But I will say that I do expect FSU to have a big chunk of fans in that stadium. Now, it's a small stadium, only about 25,000-ish people there. And I've seen like the Seminole clubs out that way have sold out their tailgates. They expanded it, and I believe they're on their way to sell out again. So it would not surprise me to see Florida State have 5,000 to 10,000 fans, almost half of that stadium. I mean, you know, we travel very well, and you have a pretty good reason to get out of town right now anyway. So I would expect to see Florida State have a pretty good chunk of fans in that stadium. SMU did come out as a 5.5-point favorite in this one with an over-under of 47.5 points. This is actually the first game of the season that Florida State has been an underdog all year, which, to be frank, is kind of surprising. You know, they've still managed to be favored in every one of these games so far this season. So 5.5-point road dog for Florida State is a little bit not, it is a little bit surprising because I almost thought it would have been more than that, the way they looked in that last game. Now, when you look at this, they are, the SMU is 2-1 at home with wins over FCS, Houston Christian, and TCU, and then they lost to BYU. This is Florida State's first true road game, as their other game outside of Tallahassee, the only game outside of Tallahassee, was that week zero game in Ireland. Florida State is 1-3 versus the spread and 1-3 versus the money line. SMU is 2-2 versus the spread. I don't believe they covered in that Nevada game, which was a kind of a stinker game for them, and 3-1 versus the money line. Now, the ESPN matchup predictor gives SMU a 71.4% chance in this one. That's really high. I mean, not surprising, but, you know, also pretty high. And this is kind of another game of first for these two programs. This is the first time that they've met. This is the first ACC game for SMU. And hey, we spoiled Cal's first ACC game, so hopefully we play spoiler again this week. Now, when you look at SMU, a couple of quick notes just to think about before we get into our full-on preview on Friday. They did make a change at quarterback. Preston Stone was their starter last year, had a good year by all respects, but then gets benched this year. And in comes Kevin Jennings, their more mobile guy. And now, I haven't really done a lot of deep film study on SMU yet. That's coming in the next couple of days. But from the games that I did get to watch against them, I don't know that it's necessarily that Preston Stone was struggling. It's that they couldn't protect him, man. I mean, it was almost like every single dropback, he had pressure in his face. He was just, you could see him getting visibly frustrated by the pressure that was in his face almost immediately. I mean, he had people in his lap almost every dropback. And so to me, that's a good and bad thing, right? Because that tells you that their offensive line is not great. And your defensive line, if they play like they did against Cal, they can have a big effect on this game against SMU. I think they can really eat in this game. And I know they put up 66 points against TCU. Only 45 of that was offensive points. Now, again, hey, I'm no mathematician here, but 45 is more than 14. So you're going to have to score a little bit more than 14 points to win this game. But BYU held them to only 261 yards and 15 points. And Kevin Jennings did play most of that game. So I think if you can really influence the line of scrimmage against SMU, which I think you have a really good opportunity to do with the way your defensive line has played in the last two games, that can really give you a chance in this game. But you have to do that knowing that Kevin Jennings is a dual threat guy. And we know Florida State kind of played them a little timidly in the first two games, and they gave up a lot of rushing yards. So you're going to have to be careful there. But, you know, Kevin Jennings is not the most dynamic quarterback either. He's 63rd in QBR at 57.7. So far, when you look at his numbers on the season, on his deep passes, they only throw deep shots he has so far. Now, he's been, I think, the full-time starter against TCU. He played most of the BYU game, and then he played a little bit in the other two games, but not as the starter. He's only thrown 10% deep passes on the season, and he's 0-for-7 on those deep shots. So not really going to probably challenge you deep, but they do like to live some mid-range passes there, 31.4% of his passes, but not the most effective. Only 10 of 22, 45.5%. 61st out of 71 quarterbacks in Power Four. So not that great at the mid-range passes either. He's not necessarily going to beat you with his arm. Now, he's pretty good at the short passes, which are 0 to 9 yards, 28.6% of their offense, 16 of 20, 80% there. Behind the line of scrimmage, 27.1%, 20% screens, and 89.5% completion percentage. So they're going to keep it behind the line of scrimmage to that 10-yard or less passing range. That's where they really like to live. So this is going to be one of those games, like Adam Fuller listened to me for the third time when we talked about Georgia Tech, when we talked about Boston College. You have these mobile guys who aren't great throwers, and so you have to put this game on Kevin Jennings' arm. You have to do that because I don't think he's good enough to beat you with his arm. And so you're going to have to force him to throw the ball without letting him just run loose, because he's pretty quick. He's, you know, he's a pretty quick guy. And they do like to run the ball with him. When you look at his yardage so far on the ground this year, 38% of his yards came on scrambles, 62% on design runs. So they will chalk up a lot of runs for him as well. Now, he's only faced pressure on 30% of his dropbacks. So not a whole lot there, but again, that mobility helps. And you need to get some pressure on him. This is another game, and we talked about it before earlier in the show. They did 34 pressures, 10 sacks in the last two games. when you look at Kevin Jennings, he's got a 69.2% completion percentage, two touchdowns, one pick on in clean pockets. Against pressure, only 7 of 18, 38.9% completion percentage, one touchdown, no picks when he's under pressure. So you got to get pressure. He has not thrown for over 150 yards this season, even as the starter, even in that BYU game. He actually threw more in the BYU game as coming in relief of Preston Stone than he did as the starter against TCU there. Preston Stone, like we said, he got benched because that offensive line was not protecting him well. So you need them to be able to get to the quarterback, or you need to be able to dominate that line of scrimmage. But remember, you know, again, like, and again, remember, they struggled in that Nevada game, and Nevada's not a very good team. So they were, I think, a 17.5 point or 27.5 point, favorite, and barely won that game. Now, let's talk about that TCU game real quick, and then we're going to wrap things up because I don't want to give, you know, all the sauce before Friday. 45 offensive points versus TCU, which did include a 1 yard touchdown drive. So again, man, I mean, it's still hard because that's still 38 offensive points, which, I mean, you barely scored 45 offensive points this entire season. So you're going to have to find something on defense. And this is the second, according to Advanced Metrics, this is the second best defense that you've faced. Again, keep in mind, they haven't faced a lot of great offenses either. Now, they did hold BYU to, they won that game with 18 points, but one of those was a insane punt return touchdown. So they held them to, you know, what, barely any offensive points. There's 11 offensive points. So you're going to have to figure out the way to score. I don't think you're going to win this game unless you go to Dallas and score at least 20 points. I just don't. But you're going to need your defense to have a big game against this offense, especially with that quarterback. He's young. He's pretty inexperienced. He did play for them a little bit last year. You're going to need to put the game on his arm and force them to make mistakes. Their running back, which most of you know, Jalen Knighton, nicknamed Rooster, was originally at Miami. But again, when you look at that TCU game, they only had 375 yards, putting up 45 offensive points. That's kind of tells you there was some fluky stuff in that game, but they did rush for 238 yards. So you're going to have to stop them on the ground. We know Florida State was abysmal against the run in the first two games, but then cleaned things up the past 2 weeks. Against BYU, they held them to, like we said, 261 yards total and only 15 points. So, you know, there is the opportunity. I think you're probably closer to what BYU's defense is than you are what TCU is as the way you're playing right now. And they held them to 117 yards. Now, they also forced three turnovers in that game, two fumbles and one interception. So you're going to need to rely on your defense in this one, like big time. And your offense is going to have to come to score. But, you know, even against Nevada in that first game, they only rushed for 100 yards. So they had that one real breakout game on the ground there. As far as running on the ground goes. So, man, I really do think you have the ability to win this game at SMU. If you can build on that momentum, if you can get things, you know, if you can rely on your defense, if your defense cannot give up these points, like if you can keep them to like that kind of TCU-ish type of, or not the TCU, the BYU type of score, if you can keep them under 20, I feel really good about your chances of winning. You're just going to have to figure out how to score some points here, man. I think you should be able to control the line of scrimmage in this one, but this is an opportunity for Florida State to kind of carry that momentum into another week into Dallas, because look, let's be honest. I'm probably not going to pick you to win against Clemson or even keep it close. So you need to get this one. This is a big one if you want to be bowl eligible at the end of the year, because you feel like you can get maybe SMU. It's a small stadium against a team that has had really one good game this season. I mean, Nevada was not a good game for them. Houston Christian is an FCS school. And then they lost to BYU, who's a solid squad. I mean, they blew out Kansas State, which is kind of a surprise. And then, you know, they blew out TCU here, but they've had one good game. And so they're transitioning from G5 to P5. They don't have a good history against Power 5, Power 4 teams. So this can be your opportunity to get another win. You feel pretty good about, maybe you can go on the road and get a win at Duke, UNC. It's going to be a tough offense to stop, but man, I mean, their defense is atrocious. I mean, you saw what James Madison put up, over 50 points in the first half. They put up more points in the first half against UNC than you have all season, just about, which is insane to even think about. So you have an opportunity there. You have Charleston Southern. And then by the time Florida gets to Tallahassee, I mean, they look like they got some life now. They just blew out Mississippi State, who's probably the worst team in Power Four. But they're going to be on the backside of like a six-game losing streak. That team's going to be demoralized. So you have an opportunity to maybe get some wins. Maybe you can find a coin flip game in there somewhere. But this one on Saturday is going to be big, because if you lose this and then you back that up with a loss at Clemson, man, you're pretty much out on everything. And so at that point, I would just go youth movement. But the thing is, you have to be excited about your defense. You have to be concerned about your offense, but you're hoping that maybe they can continue to run the ball better. Maybe they can continue to just try and work with DJ, because obviously they're not going to bench him. So I'm not going to get excited about hoping that they do. It's just not going to be the case right now. So hopefully they can figure some things out. Hopefully the new changes on the depth chart can lead to some things with some more explosive wide receiver play there. But you still got to connect to them from the quarterback position. So we will see, man. But I do think if Florida State's defense comes to play like they did against Cal and like they did against Memphis, and you can go in here and control this line of scrimmage, I think this is a game that you have an opportunity to win, but it won't be easy. You know, when you see what they did against TCU, even putting up 45 offensive points, 38 if you don't count the one-yard touchdown drive, you know, you haven't come close to even scoring 30 all season. So, you know, you're not going to win on the road by scoring 15 points. But we'll see, man. We'll see. There is definitely some positives about this team. There's definitely some good things to take away. But, man, that offense is still struggling, and that quarterback is still a boat anchor for that offense. So you're going to have to figure some things out there. We'll see how it looks, man. We'll be back on Friday. We'll have some more practice reports to talk about. We'll talk about some more of the things that have come out throughout the week with Florida State. And as they look to hopefully carry some momentum over to another week and get a win in Dallas on the road against SMU. So we'll see, man. It would be big to carry some momentum. To go 2-3 into Clemson would feel a lot better than 1-4 if you could get two wins in a row against two not great but solid programs, right? Not great but solid. That would make you feel a lot better. So we'll see, man. They got a bye week coming after Clemson, so just get some momentum, carry it over. And appreciate you guys tuning in. Again, if you're in the path of that storm, our thoughts and prayers are with you. And do what's smart. Do what's best for you. And just be safe out there, guys, because, I mean, this thing looks pretty bad. So make sure you check out our sponsors for today, Alumni Hall FSU, as well as the Autograph app. Make sure you check back with us on Friday. I just published an article that goes along with this episode on plantthespear.com. You can check that out, the Trouble in the Trenches article, which I still encourage you guys to go read. All available on our website at plantspear.com. So got to win. Might not have been pretty, but we got to win, and it's always better than a loss. So just wanted to, I said this was going to be short. It's never short with us, but we're going to just wanted to bring you guys some thoughts after that Cal game to kind of dive a little bit deeper than we will be able to on Friday. So appreciate you guys tuning in. You guys have a good and safe week, and we'll talk to you on Friday. Until the next one, as always, go Noles.